Good morning, and thank you for being here at 9 a.m. to talk about data. My name is Heather Hiles. I'm the CEO and founder of PathBright, which is a Web 2.0 e-portfolio product. But that's not really what we're here to talk about today. We're here to talk about data. And I'm actually going to be building on the blocks of a conversation that was started by the Department of Education yesterday, in which they said there are four major trends occurring in education right now. The first, mobile. Second, social. Third, prevalent, ubiquitous, inexpensive access to content, curricula. And then the final being big data. And so we're going to drill down into an aspect and a conversation about that final piece, big data. I'm really glad you're here with me. And what I want to say is that although I'm going to start a conversation, I hope it'll be a collaborative conversation over time. So I'll just put that out there. And before I get into it start presenting, I want to give you a little bit of background about my experience and my frame of reference for the conversation. I think it's very valuable, and it'll let you know where I'm coming from. So at the outset, I want to tell you that and let you know that I have 20 years of experience in both K-12 as well as adult education. And my experience in K-12 culminated with a couple of key pieces of information that I would like to share with you. One, I was a former school board commissioner with San Francisco Unified. And then for the past 6.5 years or so, I've been on the board of directors of a set of charter high schools. And the reason that's super relevant, I think, to the conversation is this set of charter high schools has been a research and development place, a location, where we're really learning about the achievement gap in real time and addressing it. And these schools have been able to address it and advance students in one academic year about 3 grade levels by looking at real-time data, formative data, about individual students and being able to interact and intercede and guide and through e-portfolios. And that's one example and experience I have over here. And then in adult education, I was pulled out of the private sector to create a nonprofit called SF Works around the time of welfare reform. And in that experience, we successfully got 5,000 women from welfare and trained into living wage jobs. But the way that we were able to do that is through manual assessments of women's skills and knowledge coming in. So these women had, on average, 6th grade reading and 4th grade math. And by the time they were placed into jobs, they typically had about 9th grade reading, 7th grade math. And they also had very specific, concrete skills tied to a particular job. But the way that we knew that all along the way was by doing assessments, manual most of the time, and then sometimes we would use some e-learning tests and assessments through a company called Digital Think. These have been both very instrumental to me in what I'm going to talk about today. And I want to contrast Leadership Public Schools with SF Works, because although we use the data from SF Works to know what to invest in and what kind of training worked for what kind of woman with what kind of background. But we used all that data for the benefit and the efficacy of SF Works. The women never left SF Works with their own data and knowledge about how they performed best, about how they could learn optimally, how they could be most effective. And if I had it to do over again, I would have them all using e-portfolios as a mechanism or vehicle for being able to track their own outcomes, track their own knowledge and achievements, and to be able to build on that body of knowledge over time. And that is what we're doing at LPS. And although, you know, we're starting in high school, I think ideally, kindergartners, first graders should be learning about what their learning styles are, how they learn best, and watching and tracking their own body of knowledge at that stage. So that's where this conversation begins, which is we believe that, the thesis that I want to present to you today is that we believe that we should all be in possession of our own data about our knowledge and achievements, and to be able to track and use the content that we produce. And that there's tremendous benefits in being able to, in a longitudinal way, see your own progress. And I even want to take that a step further and suggest to you that there are big costs to the individuals and sacrifices, even at a community or a national or global level, about not tracking that kind of content and not putting it in the hands of individuals that I think are going to catch up with us if we don't do something about releasing the data. And what I mean by that is that, as you know, there's a lot of conversation these days about the rate of economic development, what's the rate of growth of our GDP versus China and other countries. And I think that we are working with arms tied behind our back when we don't properly utilize achievement and knowledge-related data. Because when there are knowledge gaps, when there are communities that have job opportunities and people not prepared for them, then we are not efficiently matching up people's skills or preparing them for the opportunities we need to progress and grow our economy. And that's one example of that. And so there are grave consequences to not optimizing learning experiences or employment opportunities for people. And then on the optimistic side, I think it's a wonderful opportunity. I think that there are a lot of people who are looking at this particular topic from a lot of different angles, and I am very optimistic that there are many different ways and many different paths to being able to track and your knowledge and achievements over time, and to showcase those and to aggregate that information for smart communities of many different types. So that's what we're talking about today, and I'm really glad that you've joined in to be part of this. The problem is getting exacerbated in an interesting way because there are so many places that our content are held, our data are held. They're in servers, in schools and in universities. They're in school information systems, LMSs, hard drives. We also, though, have a lot of achievement and knowledge-related data in folders and in Dropbox and even in Facebook. And they're scattered and disparate, and we have access to some but not all, and not in a way where we can cohesively aggregate that content for the kinds of benefit I'm discussing. And I'll get the hang of this. Let me go over there. Okay, great. And so what I want to talk to you today about and really kind of propose to you and invite you to be part of is a data liberation movement. Welcome, guys. And I hope you'll join in. At the individual level, I want people to own their own data so that they can learn from their data and learn from their progress and have control over how they are showcased, how they are tracked, and even for them to, as we talk about, but I think the proof is in the pudding, in the implementation, allow people to opt in to opportunities, for opportunities to be able to showcase their knowledge in ways that are helpful to their communities. At the institutional level, I want to enable institutions, schools and other institutions, companies, et cetera, to be able to support individuals on their own trajectories of growth and development by, as the example I gave at Leadership Public Schools, where teachers can intervene when they see a student is stuck and not able to continue on the path that they need to be on. At the company level, when students, or when employees rather, identify a goal for development and promotion and advancement within the company, there are lots of opportunities to recommend certain kinds of training, certain kinds of mentorship, other kinds of supports for them to realize their goals. But that requires that there's some sort of information being exchanged and connected for that to really occur. And then at the more macro level, this is where a university, a network like Stanford University that we work with, could actually say, okay, we have people who are experts in nuclear nonproliferation this year, and they should be really part of informing policy that helps us interact with other countries and governments about this topic. There are a ton of biotech jobs coming available in Silicon Valley and the Bay Area, but we seem to have a shortage of people who are getting the proper degrees and credentials. This kind of information is critical to our economy today, and there's a tremendous opportunity for using these data for good that I think is completely underrealized right now. And I hope you guys are going to interject when you have questions or comments, okay? I know it's early, but this is an interesting quote that I wanted to read to you that is an excerpt from a really important book. It's almost a Bible for parents right now called College Admission. And it's written by a former admissions officer from Stanford and Sarah Lawrence and a bunch of schools, plus a journalist. And their quote is, "The best way students can reach their destination and arrive there healthy, whole, and ready to take on new challenges is to follow their own path and be themselves." This is about having an authentic pathway and trajectory for your own personal development. And it's only in that authentic way of being able to track your own progress, your own interesting, unique aggregation of experiences and knowledge, informal and formal, that we can actually help people realize and maximize their success, their outcomes. And I'm going to give you examples now from our ePortfolio platform because this is how we do it, and this is our response to this. But what I'm hoping is that we're going to get to hear from you all who have ways of impacting and realizing and opening up data that are available to learners of all ages that you work with. And when I talk about students and our opportunities interchangeably, it's because I think of everybody in this room as a student, and I think of us all as lifelong learners. So I should have articulated that earlier, but it is it's never too late to continue to track your own path and to realize your goals. So what we do is we aggregate actual hard empirical data. As one type of data that is informative to your knowledge graph or your knowledge development process, and it can be in the form of official certified transcripts. We also pull in hard data of test scores from various organizations, and this is an empirical explanation of some of the skills and competencies that we all possess. It can be certifications. We also pull in military occupational data so that what people have achieved and learned while they were in military gets acknowledged as well. And then we have ways of people being able to integrate and pull in more qualitative data about work product. And this is an example of a student who's captain of his rugby team. And this is a real expression of his own leadership competencies and proficiencies. And he's able to express and showcase that capability with hard data. And once we've done this thing of pulling all these kinds of evidence and of achievement and knowledge and all these different beautiful assets of various types, we can connect dots for people, and we can show them about their own body of knowledge and progress and map it out in many different kinds of formulations and ways. But there is something that's been proven through the last decade of studying e-portfolios has demonstrated that people actually improve their and enhance their critical thinking skills, their achievement rates of many different types by understanding how the dots get connected and being able to synthesize and get feedback about how they synthesize what they're learning. And so there are many, like I said, many different dashboards or way of connecting the dots. But what's important is that at the individual learner level, that I am able to do that over time, and I have tools for doing that. And that then once you've collected the data at the individual level, that can be rolled up into many different ways in which teachers and faculty and administrators and counselors and others can look at it at the classroom level, at the school level, at the community level. And then the other thing that we think is critical for people, and this has a lot to do with the ownership of your own content, is how you want to publish and share publicly what it is that you know and what it is that you've achieved. And we all strongly at Pathbright believe that people should be in control of what they've created, what they've and that they can publish and figure out how to curate and share that with the world. So this is one example of one template of portfolio that gets that can be shared out. There are an infinite number of ways in which people want to be able to showcase their capabilities. So our mission at Pathbright is to build innovative solutions that help students collect, track, and showcase a lifetime of achievement. And that recommend pathways for continuous success. A person gets to see what they've actually achieved versus what they planned on achieving, then there are opportunities for maybe acknowledging some achievements that they never really gave themselves credit for, and maybe that might suggest a change in path a little bit, or perhaps supplement competencies that they really haven't acquired, and to reach out or to be reached out to improve what they've achieved or to fill a missing proficiency. And that's where we believe e-portfolios are a proven great technology for achieving those kinds of goals. But as I said, that's our recommendation for technology for how to track and how to maximize the usage of individual knowledge data. And so I'm wondering, in this room full of knowledge and information and experiences, what you all, from where you sit, see in terms of opportunities for putting data in the hands of people that you interface with, and how you might be able to participate that, or if you want to challenge this whole thesis and you're not interested in that, I'd be interested in that conversation as well. So is anybody interested in sharing this early in the morning? Okay, let's see. Yes, please. Yeah, please. Yeah, exactly, because it's recording. Thank you. You're on it, and I'm not yet.
So a general question there's a lot going on with assessing individuals' competencies before they come into a program.
Yes.
And one of the challenges with that is we can identify someone's competencies, mm-hmm. but then connecting that to curriculum. So
yes.
Sub-credits, micro-credits mm-hmm. within the curriculum.
Yeah.
So, you know, we have these different silos of an e-portfolio or a learning management system
mm-hmm.
or an ERP.
Yeah.
And so I'm intrigued a little bit about you're talking about both the individual approach as well
yes.
as this kind of overall institution approach.
Right.
So how are you bridging those or connecting those?
Well, that's a great question. And when I started out in the beginning talking about this fragmentation and disparate places for all these pieces of data, we absolutely believe that you need one place where you can pull it all together. So the way that we handle this is we have a bit of a switchboard of services where we've done integrations with Khan Academy, so a place of informal learning, plus with LMSs, which is very common to, you know, most universities have Blackboard or eCollege or Moodle, et cetera. And we have Google Apps and integrations with, there can be an infinite number of integrations and places where data need to come in, ERPs, SISs, et cetera. And so my contention is that you really need to have a place where you can pull it all together. And for the individual efficacy at least. Because you may have an institution, a school, that says, okay, for our purposes, we've got it all covered. We can track what individuals are doing. But for me as a student, Heather, if I don't have my content following me through various networks and institutions, I'm not benefiting from that connection. And that's what we're getting at right now. So we believe that data should be portable and should follow each individual throughout their lives. Does that make sense to you? I mean, come back, or I can give you a standalone mic if you'd like.
Yeah. We'll
yeah. No, I mean, oh, I'm sorry. Come on back up. I see you got more on your mind.
I think there's a lot to say about one, when we have a non-traditional student come in.
Yes.
And one brief story on that. We had someone who'd been in prison for about 7 years and they wanted to get a college degree to get a job.
Yeah.
And after talking to the person for a while, we learned that they had learned how to weld while they were in college.
Uh-huh.
And it turns out they could weld very well. They didn't have much else to do for the last 7 years.
Right.
Except learn how to weld. So we did some assessments and awarded a credential with individual competency based, and they did quite well.
Great.
The challenge, of course, with that is then tying that into individual competency assessment. So with back to towards the curriculum, of course, and not that you can't be the answer to everything in that regard. But the other side of that is when somebody leaves with the degree or credential and learns new skills on the job, learns new competencies and new certification,
yes.
Then reverse articulating that back into the institution
yes.
in some way. So
yes.
Something that you can take with you
yeah.
and then tying the competencies back towards the curriculum is that critical kind of linkage.
Yes, absolutely. The way that we deal with that, that's extremely well said, and that's a great point. The way that we deal with this is this, that we support and we help universities and K-12 schools and companies create networks and an e-portfolio platform so that system-wide with existing students and even alumni, they can track the achievements that the individuals want to have reside and held maybe in perpetuity at that institution. And that's critical for a couple of reasons. It really helps the institution know who's coming out, what they're achieving, and what they're achieving even after they've left the institution. And it's very helpful for the individual to make conscious decisions that this is what I have in my body of knowledge, and this is what is appropriate for me to share with Stanford for them to know about what I'm achieving. And so there are these different layers of sharing information for the body and the common good of communities versus my individual benefit of progression and development. And those are both very important pieces of the metadata puzzle. I'm not prepared to talk about how that should inform curricula, but I heard that other part of the question. I didn't not hear it, but I don't have enough knowledge and experience to talk about that piece well. But I think the integration and the continuous connecting of that body of knowledge almost to a, you know, in a real-time way is important. What we do know is that people are exponentially, at an exponentially higher rate, learning new skills all the time. And I, just as a personal example, my mother had one job for 35 years in the governmental sector. She didn't ever get promoted. She had one job. I've had easily 35 jobs in every sector you can name, and I'm still going strong. And so the rate at which we need to not only track our new competencies, but then also be able to articulate them is real time. I need to be able to tell customers and investors and family and colleagues and peers from various places about what I'm achieving today and what I know today, and they need to be able to share back and forth with me. So I think that that's a very, very important need. And again, we've found one vehicle for being able to do that. Okay, thanks. And then also Jeff. You'll be next. Yeah.
I was wondering, do you have a sample portfolio that you can show us and walk us through more in detail about what it can show and what it can gather?
I do. I really wanted to have a broader topic about the liberation of data at this particular session, but you'll see these conspicuous white shirts. Yeah. There are three or four of us who can give product demos for you after the session. Is that okay? And because there are different kinds of e-portfolios in the world, we have a particular flavor. There are different kinds of ways of aggregating data, and I don't want to do a demo right now in detail of our product per se.
Okay. But, well, then maybe my next question is. What do you hope would be typical success stories that come out of people using this? I mean, I think even without this kind of e-portfolio, I mean, people have been gathering this in some way, whether it's on LinkedIn or on their personal website and that kind of stuff.
Right.
But how, what kinds of success could this lead to if they are even more organized in this way?
Sure. Yeah, no, I'm happy to give use cases. That might be more illustrative. So an example, let's go back to the leadership public school students who are having to track on a very regular basis their achievements and their competencies. As the CEO of Leadership Public Schools always tells me, it's like Swiss cheese. You don't have time to reteach the cheese, the stuff that students know, but you've got to hone in on the gaps that they don't know and teach those to them. And so in real time, being able to track what you know and what you don't know is incredibly helpful. And e-portfolios, at least our version of them, are great about aggregating, as I said, empirical hard data, formative kinds of data, more qualitative, substantive. A great example of what somebody has achieved is a keynote speech they deliver on Cesar Chavez Day, or photos from a summer abroad in Outward Bound, or an audio file of a performance an opera performance they delivered, and it goes on and on. And so being able to show in a more holistic, comprehensive way what people are knowing is one of the possibilities and the opportunities we have now that there's so much great digital media and other kinds of technology available to us. And so what that informs is that when an admissions officer now is looking at a student who maybe got A's, but they got them out of Compton High, and so they're kind of turned down to the equivalent of a C of a private school student who got an A as well, and maybe they don't have the same test scores, but they can showcase their spoken word performances that show their ability to write, perform, produce in a very complex way. You're able to see a comprehensive profile of someone. One of the statistics I like to give is that Harvard University last year rejected 1,100 students to undergraduate who had perfect math SAT scores. And what that tells us is that a test score and a GPA is not enough to understand the right fit between learner and institution. And what that also tells us is that, but when I talk to admissions officers, they tell me, look, we have test scores, we have GPA, and we have a personal essay if the student wrote it themselves, and they can tell. And the letters of recommendation mean nothing. So we have a very limited way of differentiating students. And the same is true for employers. I hire people all the time, and I also have worked with hundreds of employers. And they need a better way of being able to understand and filter through different people's talents and real-time knowledge than what you see on a one-dimensional piece of paper or even on your LinkedIn profile, because it's the same information, it's just online. And nothing speaks better. I would much prefer to hire a person who came out of a technology program, maybe wasn't in the top 15 ranked schools, but is an expert in HTML5 right now, and I can see what they've done in the last 6 months, than somebody who has this impeccable, you know, computer science degree and pedigree, but is 10 years out of date with technology. And so being able to see in real time what people really have in terms of knowledge and assets is playing out real time every day. And I would say, you know, it's up to us to create the right technologies to keep up with people. And that's what we're trying to do right now. Does that help? Okay, thank you. And then, so I think this gentleman had a question, if you don't mind.
Yeah, that's...
Go for it.
To go back to something that you said earlier, and thanks for going into K through 12. I'm working in that world and trying to help a school get its head around both portfolios and badges.
Excellent.
Both being the buzz terms of the day.
Right.
But again, huge.
Just don't say gamification, because that buzzword I can't stand.
but done right, huge opportunities. So two questions. The first one, very quickly, you said, you know, how, in the case of LPS leadership, you know, how do you see that institution kind of keeping that going in perpetuity, mm-hmm. in a world where, say, there is some badge construct, and there definitely
That's
is
right.
all this social media.
That's right.
Do you really see graduates from LPS taking the time to go back to LPS and say, hey, I just did this, I just did that?
Okay. Yeah, I mean, yeah. So this is a design issue, and again, you know, I'll probably keep stating this kind of disclaimer. This is how we view the world. It's one way, which is that individuals should be able to open portfolios for themselves or parents for their kids as early and whenever they want. And they should be able to help them maintain them throughout their lives. When you go to a leadership public schools that has a network of e-portfolios, you allow them a code to plug into that network and to share some of their content in classrooms and share some of the content for school record purposes and, you know, a capstone project. Maybe it's on file with the school in perpetuity. But then you unplug and you go on to high school. I mean, you go on to college. And even if a school doesn't offer the portfolio network, that student can maintain their portfolios. And what I would suggest to you is that students today are producers of so much amazing content. They're almost addicted to being able to curate it, and they definitely want to hold on to it. I had an MIT sophomore engineer tell me that he was a double major in engineering and theater. And he had this amazing portfolio of all of his theater work, but really didn't have anything that showcased what he could do in engineering. And he said, you know, I wish I had had this portfolio years ago. And I said, he's like 18. I said, it's not too late. You can start now, trust me. I mean, I've lost more work than you have to put in a portfolio. And so the point being is that it's up to the individual, I think, to be empowered with a portfolio and to have the opportunity to plug into the networks that they can. Now, you raised a couple of other points underneath there. One is that technology is changing all the time. Are there going to be ever standards around core educational achievement data that comes out of that's recommended by the Federal Department of Education? There are certainly going to be new kinds of technologies where people start to hold data in the future and evidence of their achievements. And it's incumbent upon us to find ways of synthesizing old and new data from different sources all the time and pulling it into one place. I think that that's what we deserve and owe users today, because it's completely doable. You hold the content in the cloud, and you integrate with different systems, and you let them put it in and curate it. It's not hard. It's not expensive today. And so that's what I think we should be building, our systems like that.
Okay. I guess just the quick...
Go for it.
I'd just very quickly be interested to hear your thoughts then on badges. Because
sure.
Ostensibly,
badges
aren't
are
badges something
data.
That would be a bigger umbrella that all of the things that I've done... And again, it'll be inefficient for a few years.
Right.
We have all these different badge systems.
Right.
Then ultimately, maybe there is a winner that
right.
is kind of the gold standard.
Yeah, there may be gold standards. And we certainly, for example, that's one of the reasons we integrated with Khan Academy, because we think that there are great badges and evidence of people's achievements that come out of Khan. But they can come out of Mozilla. They can come out of all kinds of places. For us, it's not choosing one type of curricula, one type of achievement, one type of badge system. We don't create badges ourselves. It's about having a place where people can take from informal sources as well as formal environments all the evidence of their achievements and put them together. So we should be ecumenical to all badge systems. So if I got a certificate and a badge out of UC Extension program, I should be able to showcase my knowledge on car auto repair just like I can showcase my transcript from UC Berkeley. And it matters not to us where or who delivers the badges or the evidence of your achievements. Yes.
Yeah, so I'm curious about data context in this model.
Uh-huh.
Right, so the model can show, I'm a 6 out of 10 skill set in basket weaving.
Yes.
Is that good or bad?
Right.
Is this what, for this career that I'm seeking?
That's right.
Does that matter? Does it not matter?
Exactly.
So the raw data is confusing a lot of times without some context.
That's right.
And then also in the same line, we've done work around risk modeling, let's say at-risk student identification, things like that,
yes.
where, we try and share some of this information with students directly. You trigger like a fight or flight syndrome without context. If you just give the data, we
right.
identified the students
that
triggered the risk model. We let them know. And then, within 24 hours, 80% of those students drop the class.
Yeah.
Whereas if an enrollment advisor reaches out and provides some context.
They
and
intervene.
You can improve,
right.
That you do intervention. Right. Then with that context, you can bring them along and help them do things better. So I'm just curious
right.
how in this data aggregation, which it sounds like an aggregation primarily.
It's both.
How do you deal with context?
Right. So I talk about aggregation because it's the building block of being able to do what you just articulated. But the power comes into where you just talked about it, in my mind. And the power from the institutional perspective comes out of that experience. So when a mentor, teacher, advisor, counselor, you name it, can see that a student is not submitting their writing samples, not doing 4 or 5 drafts before they submit a paper and then they get a D on it, someone can come into their life and say, listen, you have to write the drafts, you have to get them edited, and then you'll get better grades. Doesn't mean you should drop out of school. And it's with the data of being able to see real-time what people are doing that you have that opportunity. So that's one opportunity for institutional portfolios that where I think some of the magic happens is that pushing critical and analytical feedback between folks, between a student and somebody else. And then after that, being able to recommend and tell you where you meet up with, against your goals, peer performance compared to yours is incredibly valuable. As Chris, our product officer, likes to say, he loves Mint as a product, and he's very inspired by it. And he likes to say, I have set up goals, and I track my monthly expenditures. Sorry to out you like this, but oftentimes, almost all the time, I have totally spent my money differently than how I thought I spent it. And I'm not necessarily doing the things that I thought I was supposed to be, or I was doing. And so the actual is very different from the budgeted or the planned. And being able to know that in your own personal portfolio is critical. And then, to take it another place and then give you another use case, when a student says, okay, I want to be ready for a 4-year university, and I'm a sophomore, and got a D in geometry or didn't master the correct theorems, the sooner I can figure out that I'm not on the path I thought I was on, And I'm not performing as my peers were performing, and I'm not really ready for prime time yet, for college yet, I can do other things. I can go to Khan Academy, or I could go to Grocket, and I can retake geometry, and I can get myself taught that even if I don't have time in my course, my schedule for next semester. So that kind of information around peers is very helpful. There's a lot of controversy about competition. The fact is there's a tremendous amount of competition that all students face today. But even if you don't need it for competition purposes, as you said, just for context, to understand, here's how I relate to the world, or here are the skills I have right now. Is there anybody, like an employer out there who needs my skills? Because they're kind of eclectic. and so having that kind of information is incredibly helpful. And so that issue of context is hugely important. Thank you.
Can you speak a little bit about your experience working with companies, say, like Blackboard and, say, various institutions to liberate that data? So I'm sort of thinking about Facebook's general willingness to liberate data into my Google Plus account a student moving from a Blackboard university to a Moodle university, institutions concerned about that student moving from one institution to another. Mm-hmm. I would imagine there are a lot of security issues and also companies that don't necessarily want to give you that information because they want to do something similar.
That's why it's a movement still. In a nutshell, we can walk the talk and we can showcase how it's done and how it works for the individuals. We can even showcase how to do better about informing people about how we want to use their data. People don't like Google doing searches and having them tied to monetized systems without them knowing it because they don't know it. But when you get to tell people about this is how we want to use your data, we want to aggregate, we're not trying to identify you and single you out, but we want to know about whether this whole class is performing well and whether it's preparing you for X, Y, and Z, or whether the school is doing a good job of it. When you let people know how the data can be aggregated for good, I think you give them informed decisions and they get to opt into opportunities to share data. Now, there are certain, there's an LTI integration, an API for pulling data in from the major LMSs. So that's how we've been able to integrate with that. So we don't have to have permission from Blackboard or Moodle to do that. And we've been able to integrate with Dropbox and Google apps or Google Docs and other systems already. But we can set a different standard for how we empower people to use their own data and share that data once it's in their portfolio and once they have possession of their data. But I think that the federal government and the Department of Education is really taking a great stance about trying to release people's data and put it in their hands and stop, certain companies from hoarding it and monetizing it and making a mint on it, but keeping it at Stanford or at so-and-so, and we never get access to our own information. So there's work to do, and that's why we need to talk about it more, and we need to organize, and we need to exert our own influence where we can. It's an important issue. Thank you. Jeff, do you want to use the mic? Okay, thanks.
So this is a great discussion, and it has me thinking about resumes we use today, which is really an aggregation and high-level summary of my accomplishments. And it's, some truths, half-truths, exaggerations, right?
Yes.
And that information can be validated, but with great effort and time.
Yeah.
And thinking about, we have the concept of an e-portfolio. We've always had portfolios, if you're in advertising, even back in the day, right, you had this portfolio you carried around. Now we have increasingly diverse and large data sets, and you're aggregating it. Mm-hmm. And like a resume, you're going to tell a story here. But I think context is critical. I also think that authenticity is critical.
Yes.
So, we talked about badges, right? And let's say this takes off and you have Mozilla as this platform, you have this trusted source.
Right.
How do you address that aspect of authenticity? How do I know that the story you're telling me is true mm-hmm. and meaningful?
Mm-hmm.
And I also think about, because you mentioned this specifically about recommendations, right? People know you look at grades, you look at some other things and ignore recommendations. It's interesting, I was in a meeting a few months ago and you had some entrepreneurs in Chicago. And they're talking about, you know, what skills do you look for, you know, when you're looking at MBA students or whatever. And they said, well, we really don't look at MBA students. If I want to hire smart people, I check my Rolodex.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the signaling aspect. How do you know someone's good?
Yeah,
you
exactly.
can look at a portfolio. How do you know that story's true?
Mm.
How do you put it in context? What's your
mm-hmm.
percentile?
Mm-hmm.
How does it compare to everyone else?
Mm-hmm.
Is there a badge? Is there a label? Is there a seal of approval from a trusted authority? So I scan it and I say, oh, that's all I need to know. Let's bring them in for an interview.
Yeah, no, that's a wonderful it's a wonderful topic. What usually happens in the real world is that people pull from various sources, trusted advisors, their Rolodex, you know, what institutions they're affiliated with, lots of different places to try to determine what people actually know, what they've actually achieved. I think a multimedia representation where you pull all of that together and you offer it publicly and you say, this is the strategic plan I wrote, or this is the one that I co-authored, which is a different statement. Being able to showcase different types of evidence, the diversity of evidence, starts to have a critical mass of a picture that is much deeper, much more illustrative. And there are even deeper ways of actually verifying. So what employers who have reviewed our sample portfolios have told us is that in one fell swoop, being able to navigate through a multimedia portfolio and see not only an official transcript, but if I wanted to read Heather's honors thesis on the achievement gap, you know, and she's actually offered that to me, I could review the executive summary and see what it looked like. She might even put the sample, she might even put as an example the one with the grade on it. But there are many ways when you have this really rich picture of different types of evidence that you get a real insight. And when you see somebody performing an athletic event or a piano recital, that is what it is. There's no, you know, there's no kind of, I could say on my transcript that I'm fluent in Spanish. I'm not. I can get around in Mexico, but and I remember, I have my vocabulary and such, but I'm just not fluent. But when there's an audio tape of me speaking, having a conversation in Spanish, you know I'm actually fluent. So there's a certain richness of real data that can't be substituted or summarized well in one-dimensional resumes. Yeah, yeah, go for it. Okay. Yeah.
At scale.
At scale. Okay.
I'm searching for keywords in a resume.
Yes.
Pulling out.
Yes.
Right,
yes.
I don't have time to look through all
this. To look
at
everybody. Yeah. Right, exactly. So there are a couple things about that. One is that as we're working with employers, we're having them give us the templates that they want to review 1,000 candidates by. And the reason being is that, as you said, companies, first of all, don't want different layouts. They look for certain kinds of language. They look for certain examples. If I'm applying for an engineering job, software development job at Facebook, or PHP job specifically, they want to see my sample code of PHP. How clean is it? So they might not want to see my playing basketball, but they might really want to spend some time and actually see the code. So having a system that is easy to maneuver and navigable, as an example, you see, well, I don't know if you can see it, but at the top of this is one template of a resume, and at the top there's like a header that says sample code and leadership and work experience and presentation and extracurricular, sorry. And when you push one of those kind of drops of that upper legend there, if you push leadership, then the rugby experience would pop out. And the JavaScript training video would pop out so that people can laser in and go to exactly what they want to see. When you have the template that an employer wants to see, you're significantly more likely to make it to the interview pile than you are with a traditional semantic language scan. And employers like Apple have told me they've wanted multimedia resumes for the last decade, but we weren't ready. And so you're going to see a whole change in how candidates get reviewed. And so there might be a different kind of search or summary that allows for employers to go through a batch of 2,000 applications to look for a certain quality of portfolio, and then hiring managers might want to look into that group of batch of portfolios, and then they'll figure out who they actually want to interview. But when I get to look at somebody's portfolios before I do interviews, I know so much more about who I'm talking with and what's going on. Just as one other example, this is not about employers per se, but a university official told me, we know so much more about students when they get accepted to our college and so little about them by the time they graduate. They're just a transcript at that point because the institution is bigger and for lots of other reasons. But that changes completely with the portfolio where faculty and others can watch the progress and the development of a student over time. And it's not that everybody looks at them real time, but they could actually, at the end of the program, learn a lot about the student's whole time at the university as well. There are ways to make this more efficient than the review process that employers and admissions officers go through now. And it sounds counterintuitive, but when you understand what little data they get to really differentiate people, you realize you can give them that and they can be much more efficient about finding the right fit and the right people. And there's a ton of opportunity around crowdsourcing. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes, LinkedIn and Wikipedia uses both. Yes. I'm sorry. Do you mind waiting until...
Not at all.
Okay.
Not at all.
Just to follow up on what Jeff was saying, really appreciate your preaching part of the choir.
Okay.
Advocating authentic assessment and use of portfolios for
awesome.
Over a dozen years.
Awesome.
You mentioned the issue of acting as a co-author, especially in K-12.
Yes.
You get kids who have participated in a lot of group work, and in fact, that's 21st century skill.
Yeah.
How are the portfolios going to be able to handle that?
Absolutely. Okay, so that's thank you for that question. The way that we handle it, again, is that we make distinctions between individual portfolios and group portfolios. And the reason being is that we want to encourage the richness of group portfolios and that there's a magical way of being able to track attribution and contribution in group portfolios. So when a teacher, an example is we worked with Harker High School students, and when a teacher has a science club, they do like year-long college-level research projects. And there'll be a couple teachers and maybe a group of four or five kids working on a science project. And they'll come in and they'll submit an outline. And maybe they all had a group meeting and put the outline together themselves, you know, as a group. Then they submit that and the teacher says, look, you need to do more secondary research here, more primary research there. You didn't even talk about this and da-da-da. And then they'll farm out, and one student will go do this, another student will do that, and they'll put it all back together in this group portfolio. We have a timeline interface so you can track the progress and evolution of the content, but you also see from whose account what got contributed. So there's this wonderful way of being able to see that. And what I can do as a student member of that group, I have a copy of that whole, I have access to that whole group portfolio. It's part of my personal portfolio, but you know it's from a group portfolio. And maybe my freshman year in college, I might get assigned a science research project and might want to go back and check out how we did that. And or I might want to be able to prove to somebody that I take feedback well and I can apply it well. And I might actually pull out a piece of that portfolio and say, here's where the teacher told me to go do a model of this, and here I went and did this research, and then this is what I submitted. And then these were the edits I was given, and this is what I did. All of that rich feedback evidence is typically lost in a recycling bin. And we have the ability to capture that, and people have that data available to them. So it's very powerful, and it doesn't shut down. It really, I think, enhances the understanding of group dynamics. Thank you. Yes?
So before I go, I want to clarify. You're encouraging a discussion about these, not necessarily questions about Pathbright directly.
I just didn't want to get into a product demo, but yes.
Got it.
I mean,
so in that line, and following up on Jeff's comment and the recent comment earlier by the gentleman, if we look at a resume, and we look at curriculum, and we look at a job description, the underlying common unit of analysis are the competency statements across them.
Yes.
So an individual's resume is a statement of competencies. Curriculum is learning outcomes, which should be competencies. And I use competencies not to get into too much of the word technically, but that's a good catch-all.
Yeah.
And then a job description is a list of desired competencies. Both the resume is often lacking, as has been pointing out, on how accurate and authentic it can be. Similarly, job postings are mostly horribly written as well.
Yep.
And curriculum, learning outcomes, is often poorly documented despite having years of standards and SCORM.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the distinction between a portfolio that is a multi, what we need is a portfolio system that ties together at a competency level an individual's competencies and what I have, and then to Jeff's point, the ability of the educational institution or licensing institution to validate those competencies. So the badge movement is kind of in that direction, although I think the merit badge naming schema, I mean, that kind of sounds kid-like, but the overall concept of here are individual competencies, we can certify them, some institution or a mixture of institutions can certify those competencies, and that employers can find those as a trusted resource.
Yes.
Whether they're in college, whether they're in high school, whether they're on the job. Because, you know, the value of a degree plan that we say, okay, here's the degrees, you must take these courses to get this degree.
Right.
Well, not necessarily. The value of those degree plans is sometimes questionable in the market.
Right.
But if someone can say, here are all the competencies that I've learned, HTML5, Ruby on Rails, Java, et cetera, whatever it might be, now I need to have those competencies validated, maybe by an employer or maybe by, you know.
That's right.
So that type of portfolio that travels with somebody, that is a collection of their competencies with the validation aspect of it, I think, if you build that, we will buy that.
Okay, well, you got him on record with that, right? you're right on the same page with us. And let me tell you, we're doing some partnerships with Levi's. Levi's can tell us, the hiring managers can tell us, when they hire a VP of advertising, they look for somebody who has had classical experience in a big advertising company, then went on to a smaller place and had a ton of responsibility, and it has done X, Y, and Z in terms of work product before they even will interview them. And so if they can actually see examples of exactly that path, they will then interview them. And so we can expedite their whole search process by giving them portfolios to the hiring managers, who then pick, I like that work, let's interview these folks. And so my point being is you can also reverse engineer that. So you can tell people, users, students, people who want certain jobs, here are the competencies and skills required to be great at this job. And then people can work back and try and get some candid validation. I'm a great public speaker, or I'm not so great. I'm a great fundraiser, not so great. I've really raised money, or I really haven't. I mean, there are lots of things that we can do to get real validation. One of our very deep partners is ACT, the testing company. The reason being, they have the best longitudinal body of data about how to predict real skills and what you're actually qualified to do. So they could look at my financial modeling skills and say, you're this kind of financial analyst, and that's kind of what your opportunities are with this particular skill set. And they have a database that can tell me that right now. It's another source of validation and verification that could be meaningful to employers and other people. But being able to reverse engineer from jobs, somebody told me the other day that a lot of what students are learning today will be completely irrelevant 5 years from now. And I think that there's some truth. There's some truth and there's some not so true. So what the critical thinking skills, writing, there are a lot of, you know, transitional skills that you'll use throughout your life and you'll just get better at. But then there are a lot of content-related things that we're exposed to in school that, you know, maybe HTML5, you know, will be completely irrelevant 5 years from now. So if you can see what people's capabilities are and you can understand their threads of skills and how they're relevant to real jobs, that filtering process is critical. And it's critical to employers and evaluators. And it's critical to actual users of the portfolio who are trying to achieve something. And that's what I think portfolios should do. That's the portfolio system we're building. And we would love to tell you more about it because we agree with you that that's what's so critically needed out of data today. I think we're all inundated by tons of data, and our objective is to figure out how to make it meaningful. And I want to leave you with the idea that data are not going to be meaningful to us until we have ownership of our own data throughout our lives and we can do something with it. So thank you for listening to me today and being here. I really appreciate it.